God, look away, look away, look away, Dixieland, in Dixieland, where I was born, early on a frosty morn. Look away, look away, look away, Dixieland.
Public Radio for Alaska Interior. This is KUAC FM in Fairbanks.
Good morning and welcome to Home Fires Radio Show on this sort of gray, blustery, well, not too blustery, but a little bit of snow falling as we came in to the studio today. With me in the studio this morning is Avril Goldbeck, and we're going to talk about astrology. I must admit right at the start here to a fairly large dose of skepticism about astrology. During the 60s when I was first living on my own, every time you went into a party, someone would say, "What's your sign?" And if you said the wrong thing or the right thing, it had a lot of effect on the way certain people looked at you or what they thought. Oh, that's good, I can date you. And if you were the wrong sign, they sort of moved across to the other end of the room. I had, by a variety of friends, probably, or at least I have no way of knowing how good they were at reading charts. Is that what you say? Reading charts. Mm-hmm. But they were all very different. Presumably they looked up the same information, but their interpretation was really different. And I thought, well, you know, they're very affected by what, as individuals, they think of me, and that's really influenced the reading. At any rate, there have to be many, many people who strongly believe in it, or at least are very curious about it, because you see astrology charts in all the magazines, in the daily papers. There have to be a lot of people who read them and are extremely interested, even on a day-to-day basis. One thing that's been always curious to me, before we go back and talk about some of the history of astrology, Avril, is how accurate can a daily horoscope be that's in the newspaper for an entire group of people that are born within a month.
Well, this is a problem that I've been dealing with since I've been going and talking on the radio about astrology here locally in town. That everybody has reason to be skeptical because it is very invalid what they're doing. There isn't any. It does. It's just jumble mumble, you know, and it really makes my job harder for trying to get real astrology out there to people.
Because you read that you're going to make money for 10 days in a row and you don't make any money.
You can't make you can't. It's impossible to make a prediction on a sun sign basis alone. And even doing day-to-day and week-to-week predictions for astrologers that are dealing with a particular natal chart, it takes a lot of thought and a lot of study to nail something down very, very definitely to a day or a week and tell. I never tell anybody what they're going to do. I never know what a person, how they're going to respond to their to an event, you know. Some people thrive on challenge, and other people sleep through opportunity. You never know how they're going to react.
So you don't use it as a predictor of specific action?
Mm-mm. No. There's all kinds of levels and variables always involved. And I find that if I just kind of Stay clear of getting too nitpicky with it. It helps a lot to go with the bigger cycles and investigate a life in terms of 30-year cycles or 20-year, you know, and study that more and instead of getting lost in day-to-day or week-to-week and try to make predictions, because it's pretty unwieldy to take all of this data that you have in a chart, not just the sun, but the moon and Mars and Jupiter and all the other planets, and where they are in the chart and how they relate to each other, and you have to come up with a synthesistic conclusion.
Okay, let's start with some more general background. Where did astrology first get started? How did this very complex system?
It's so ancient that it's kind of a mystery still. They're not really sure exactly because it's so old. It's a 4,000 to 6,000 year old study. It goes beyond Egyptian time into Chaldean and Babylonian, and it's kind of fuzzy back there as far as exactly when it first came out.
But we're aware of it because of hieroglyphs on ruins or some markings that.
And actual natal charts of kings, you know, old kings, and the royalty, even down through into the Middle Ages, always had astrologers at court. They were like Sir Francis Bacon was at Queen Elizabeth's court. He was one of several that were surrounding her at the time, and even Hitler had astrologers working for him, and Britain had their counter astrologers in the Second World War.
Okay, let's go back to the early times. Carla just reminded me that the wise men, the Magi, followed the stars, and that was to find
Jesus. There's been a book written by a guy named David Hughes about the possibility of that great star sighting being the conjunction of Jupiter and Saturn. And he's an astronomer, and he writes a book where he tries to build a case for, you know, why it was seen on three different occasions and how that would fit that particular conjunction in that cycle. Like it was about a 2,000 every so many hundred years, those two come together in such a way that they're that close to the Earth that they make that big a
I don't know.
Halo or whatever made them shine, you know.
So brightly and be so visible. Okay. It's a very ancient, do we call it a science or an art, or is it a little bit of both?
I think it's an art-science weld. And I keep stressing to people when I talk about it as a tool. It's a tool to assist humanity. It's you know, it's only as good as its practitioners are welding it. You know, I mean, I could hit myself over the head with a hammer. Hammers are still good to use, you know. Astrology is as good as the people that are using it.
And so you can misuse it.
Yeah, unfortunately, what most people are seeing is just absolute, it's not even astrology as I deal with it at all. It's just terrible.
Before we had modern telescopes, astrology and astronomy were one.
That's right.
It was the same study of the heavens. Mm-hmm. Did astrology change as we got telescopes and could identify more stars and have a more complete picture of?
Right. There was back in the Italian Renaissance, I believe, is the period where it began splitting off astronomy, taking one road, and astrology the other. And, in fact, astrology has been stamped out many times by different ruling authorities. Sometimes they've kept astrologers at court, and sometimes they've said, I have them, no one else can have access to. And then other times they've just wiped them out completely, you know, outlawed them and burned the books. And
bearers of bad tidings? They didn't like what they were foretelling?
Yeah, So
there was some sense that there was really power in that foreseeing.
In having that, yeah. Now, first they were used to time harvest cycles and things. I mean, that was the first, I guess, use that's been documented. And it was kind of like as astrology evolved and culture has evolved, it's become more complex.
Is that what the Farmer's Almanac uses to?
Yeah, it started out pretty
simple. Is that kind of astrology?
Yeah, that's something
to talk
like
about
it.
When the first freezes will be and when the.
Yeah, going by moon cycles and things for growing things and for the tide changes.
Okay. I must admit to being extremely confused about all this. I have a chart here, and it's got all kinds of information on it. Could you just, I know that it's difficult on the air verbally to do this without a blackboard, and you've talked about, mm-hmm. you know, the difficulty of not being able to draw things and let people picture them. Mm-hmm. But this is an interesting exercise to try and do it verbally. Could you explain what is in a chart?
The chart is mapped according to the hour that you're born, and that is called the rising sign of the ascendant. It's the sign that was rising on the east, or the eastern horizon, if you drew a straight line out into space. And it's that sign changes every 2 hours. So aura scope, or hour, is aura in Greek.
Uh-huh.
So that's where the map or the heavens are mapped from, that point or that reference point to start with.
And that also is very affected by where you're born,
mm-hmm. yeah,
on the planet
time.
Earth. It's,
right, it's
not only the time and the year, but the place.
Yeah.
And that's why all those things are very critical.
Yeah, right down to the hour, see. And that sign on the ascendant is blended. It makes a blend with your sun sign, or not, as some cases may be. If it's making a 90-degree configuration in the circle, that's called a square configuration.
Wait.
If it's making a stress aspect to your sun sign, for example, you know, say you're a Scorpio and this your ascendant is in Leo, those two things are in intention aspect with each other. So in that case, you will not probably look like your sun sign.
Okay. You are talking about the relationship of the different planets
mm-hmm.
to each other.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
And how are these...
That's the art. That's what the art does. It talks about the relativistic relationship to each planet makes to the other within the wheel. How do they square off against each other? Are they in opposition to each other? Are they conjunct?
Okay, what is the
Are
wheel?
Are they making a triangular configuration, which is the harmonious flow of energy, triangular? So astrologers use trines. That means... harmonious flow and ease, and then we've got our hard aspects, which are challenge aspects.
Okay, let's go back and try and make this a little simpler. Okay, let's start out with the planets. The planets are
The most important ones are the what they call the luminaries: the sun, moon, and the ascendant. Those are the three most important placements.
Okay.
And there's always this shading degrees and levels. You're always dealing with things in a pattern, in an order.
But when most people say, what's your sign? They mm-hmm. are talking about the sun sign.
Yeah, the sun was transiting through in a month period.
Okay. So, and there are 12 of those.
Right.
Okay. And they each have unique characteristics.
Right. Givens.
How were those?
well,
how did we reach those ideas of what
well,
Sagittarius
me,
is, what Cancer
well,
is?
Well, to me, it's not any different from saying that there's, you know, all those spruce trees out there. They're all spruce. They're in the category of spruce, but each one of those trees is different. Each one of those trees is an individual. So to me, it's not much different. You have a sun sign that may stand like spruce, and then you have willow. So you might have.
But
two
I'm
different categories of sun.
Right. I understand that they're distinct, but how did they decide what the characteristics of those signs were?
I don't know how they came up with that. It's evolved and changed over the centuries even. The language has changed like any kind of language will do.
Uh-huh.
It's a symbolic language. When I get a chart out of my computer, I have to interpret symbols. And it's like a poem, you know, it's like reading poetry or something. The interpretation is only as good as the person who's doing the interpreting.
But it's an international language. The symbols are shared internationally.
They can be taught, yes, transmitted.
But, I mean, the people who do astrology in other parts of the world, you all agree on the same symbols.
Yes, if they're using the same system, you know, that there are several calendars, systems that, like the Hindu, use the moon more in a different system altogether. So they have a... I know nothing about the Chinese zodiac. And they're different kinds of systems.
Okay.
And
But it has been an evolving system through time. And in general, what system do we use?
Gee, I don't even know what I don't know the proper name for for it.
All right, many people use this system. However,
in the English speaking world, predominantly, you know. Or in the modern Western world, I guess you would say.
Okay. Mm-hmm. So the first thing is the sun sign. Then that has to be in conjunction with a moon sign.
No. The chart is a map of the heavens, the hour you're born. And that's the environment that you were born into. And it's how things were juxtapositioned in space that make a pattern. It makes an imprint. And as planets go and transit on beyond that, like a photostatic imprint, if you study as a science these patterns and how they come, you know, back around and over the placements that were there originally, for example, or how they square off against them, you can notice something happening. There's an event, particularly when you have a lot of planets lining up in a really definite way. You know that's a very important time in the individual's life. You can see those times. I read those times. Oh, I get a chart out of my computer and I begin at birth and I read forward. And I should be able to pinpoint very basic life change situations like a move, someone coming or going in or out of the life, a job offer, some very dramatic event in the person's life. I should be able to read that coming to the present time.
Okay.
So that's what I do to check a chart. I mean, you know, that's how I know it's accurate.
I don't want to seem dense here, but I really don't understand. What is changing that you're reading? I mean,
the planets are going on around in their circles, you know, making their pattern, making their...
And how does that relate to my birth date? That's the...
You have to read the whole thing as a concert. I keep stressing that. It's not just the sun sign. The sun sign is just a piece of the puzzle. Until you do your whole chart or investigate all the planets and all the signs, then you may have some more feeling that something really is going on. Just by sun sign, some people aren't answering, you know, as well to their sun sign as they may be, because they may have, say, four planets and another sign that's just throwing that off.
I guess my confusion is it's what the relationship of the planets went on the minute and day and year you were born, but then how do they change in relationship to reading of my chart?
How do they change?
Well, you're saying things change, conjunctions of those planets change. So that you can predict.
Oh, how do they change? I think if you word it maybe one more time differently somehow, maybe I can figure out where you're at.
You were alluding to the fact that when there's different configurations, then it might indicate a major change in a life, decision, a move.
Okay. Those things are taught too, those particular patterns, you know. There's a standard that to have a particular planet opposition another particular planet is something that you can go look up in a book. You know, someone has said that when this occurs, this kind of event is likely.
Patty, can I interrupt here?
Uh-huh.
I can see that we're getting a little confused.
I am very confused.
And this is something I don't understand very well, but at least I understand natal chart. I guess what you're saying is the moment you're born, the planets are aligned in a certain way, in certain relationships to each other, and that becomes then your chart, your natal chart, and that stays with you. Mm-hmm. Then, but the planets don't stay still.
Right.
They continue to change over the years. And what she's talking about, I think, and you can correct me, Avril, if I'm wrong here, is that the planets continue to change. They continue to revolve around and change the relationship to each other. And what she tries to track is how that change that continues corresponds to what your original chart was.
Mm-hmm. That's right. The connection I think that confuses me. I mean, of course the planets change, but they change for all of, I mean...
They change for everybody, but let's say if my sun were in Capricorn and your sun is in Sagittarius, the sun continues to move around, and when it goes into... what is it in right now? It's in Sagittarius right now.
Right.
Then the current position of the sun would be more or less in conjunction with your sun.
Right.
But it wouldn't be in any particular relationship to me at all, because my sun was originally in Capricorn. Mm-hmm. Somebody else whose sun is in, say, Aquarius, there would be a relationship, but it would be a different relationship from that relationship that you have. Does that make sense?
Yes. Okay. And now what you're saying is that there are times of year based on when you were born that are more powerful. Is that a correct word? What kind of words do you use?
Well,
to describe, say, my birthday's coming up.
No.
Is this a good time or
That's a very simplistic illustration that she was using, because all of this information about the sun and the moon and what signs they're in, it's still got to be put in a deeper cycle, I guess you'd say, by virtue of the rising sign, which is another, like an overlay. So when you have a chart, you're dealing with several kinds of things going on at one time, not just that one. That's why it's so hard to explain over the air even with a blackboard. People sit there and they still don't know what we're doing for a while.
Because
it's very difficult to explain over the air.
It's like a chart of the heavens at the moment that you were born. Mm-hmm. All the stars and all the planets in relationship to each other at the moment that you were born.
Right. But then there's a wheel that's put on that's... You could have that map, and then there's another thing that sort of like an overlay that may go on top and adjusts and turns. So that's the rising sign, because the sign coming up every 2 hours changes every 2 hours.
And
that's the hour you're born. So because of the hour you're born, you know, on a given day, you've got several different charts coming out for that day. You know, you could have Scorpios all born with their sun and their moon and all their planets in the same signs with each other on that particular day. But the rising sign is going to be shifting for each one of those babies.
Mm-hmm.
Do you understand?
Mm-hmm.
It's going to continue to move. So it's just like a little dial on the outside of the wheel that goes around.
Maybe we should go back to some basics here.
Yes.
Because, again, we're talking about too much and yet not talking about
enough. Which is probably why I've always been so confused about this, and I think why a lot of people are, because there are such simplistic things in the magazines and newspapers, you know.
Really.
If you were born any time in December, that means you're going to make money today, and obviously...
No.
But obviously that's not true, and we have established that. Okay, let's talk about a definition of houses.
Well, yeah, or let's even talk about the major tools that you work with, Avril. You talk about planets. You talk about those planets being in certain signs. You talk about those planets being in aspect to each other and in certain houses. Now, maybe we should start with some definitions of what is a planet and what, let's say, for instance, what does Mars signify? What does the moon signify? What does Venus signify? And go on from there.
Yeah, really quickly, you could go on for each planet, I guess, a lot, you know, you could do a whole paragraph, I suppose. But just basically, Mars is aggressive energy, and it is... just energy itself, you know, a physical force moving, like catalytic energy. Venus is affectional energy, harmonious and beauty energy, all the nice pretty things. The moon is female. It stands for home and baby and all the Cancerian things because it rules Cancer. You know, it's mom, baby, shelter, nourish, mm-hmm. protection. You know, and also stands for the inner emotional nature of a person, be they male or female. Jupiter is a planet of expansion and abundance, and means a lot of something or largesseness. Saturn is the opposite. It's contraction, restriction, limitation, burden, duty, responsibility, restriction in general. Neptune stands for nebulosity or invisibleness or spiritualness or otherworldliness. Uranus stands for relating to your peer group, you know, friendly fashion. Stands for New Age activities and all the things that have to do with the Age of Aquarius as it rules that sign.
And also creativity.
Uh-huh. And Mercury is the planet for where your Mercury is has to do with your mental processes, your speech, language, communication, and passing of data and information. So, you know, how kind of like it shows how a person thinks. You know, if it's in a sign that has a tendency to go slowly, it would maybe your thinking would be a little slowed down. If it's in a brainy sign like Aquarius or something, then you know that person is pretty probably going to be bright unless it's augmented by another planetary placement that may argue with that.
Okay, so we all have all of those planets in mm-hmm. our sign, but it has to do with how powerful they are.
We all have those planets, or we all have those characteristics. We all have aggressive energy. We all have a value system represented by Venus. We mm-hmm. all have thinking mm-hmm. and communication represented mm-hmm. by Mercury. Mm-hmm. Now, where the individual begins to emerge is where that planet, what sign that planet is, so that a person who has, as she just got through saying, Mercury in Aquarius has a different way of thinking from a person who has Mercury in Taurus or mm-hmm. has it in Capricorn.
Mm-hmm. And like with the moon, a person who has the moon in Taurus is feeling differently internally. Their emotional identification is different than someone whose moon, say, is in Cancer or another sign.
The way they operate and interrelate to the world is what you're saying is different.
And the whole chart has to be read as a whole. That's why you go to an astrologer. They kind of take all these bits and pieces of data and make sense out of it. You know.
Yes, I was reading my chart, a sort of computer printout of it, and there seem to be some inconsistencies. Well, you know, it says you're a leader in one place, and in another place it says you're not a leader. Mm-hmm. And you were saying before we went on the air that mm-hmm. it's the reader's ability to sort of interpret mm-hmm. that and make a blend or a meld mm-hmm. of that information that it does make a consistent, coherent mm-hmm. picture mm-hmm. of the person. But it's a kind of psychological reading of mm-hmm. of your character traits,
yeah.
much more so than specific actions taken.
The chart itself, yes. The actions taken are never, you can never tell how a person is going to answer to a given energy configuration as far as what they're going to do with an event. You know, like I will not tell a person what they're going to do, but I will say that I could see an event lining up. I could see things lining up and speaking in a concerted way, say 2 weeks from now or a month from now or something, and I can say something about the flavor of that event. In other words, has it to do with your public life? Has it to do with something private in your life? Is it with your love life? Is it with your job? You know, that sort of thing. Is it with traveling? You know, but I don't know if the person is going to use that, how a person will be using that energy at all. It's audacious for me to tell a person what they're going to do at that particular point.
I guess this is part the place where I become skeptical, is that to say that some ominous event is going to occur.
I never could say that it would be ominous. That is a poor use of the tool to be doing that. That is bad practice of astrology. You do not know if it's going to be ominous. Some people, as I said, thrive on challenge situations.
But you could say that there was going to be a challenge situation.
I could say that. That I could say. If the person wishes to interpret that as, oh dear, this is going to be terrible, then that's their interpretation, not mine. You know, it's up to them to decide how they're going to say. If I use the word challenge, it's up to them to decide how they like that word or not. I have to say what
obviously
I'm looking
there
at.
There are people who like to take risks, people who like change, and
right.
and those who avoid it.
Right.
But that seems so general to me. There is challenge in all of our lives
right.
every day if we just look for
right.
it. And of course, you can refuse to see it, and stick to routine things.
Well, I think the beauty about say what I do basically, or most of the time, is tracing a Saturn cycle. Is the beauty in it is that it shows an individual their experience mapped out into some kind of pattern that they can kind of get a psychological grasp on. In other words, when I trace their Saturn cycle and they see that they have indeed had an upswing in their life going this way and then a downswing over here, you know, and then it only lasted for this amount of time and then it went on around. When they see a pattern like that or a cycle like that, there's an easing up of things like being hard on yourself or holding guilt feelings about things that happened in the past. And there's a lot of good feeling that comes across when I just, show somebody that the cycle is, in fact, even exists in existence.
But you don't intend to communicate that they're out of
it's
control.
It's just getting to know the self better, you know.
Right. But it isn't a suggestion that you have no control over the...
No. No.
That it's predicted.
Well, there are some things you don't have any, you know, there are givens that we don't have any control over. You know, what family you were born into, you know, what race, and, you know, there's lots of limitations, you know. But within those limitations, there's lots of free will. And we try to encourage as much free will as possible, as much free choice of the individual making their own decisions as possible. And this is exactly contrary to what most people have been thinking astrology was about, and that's why we've been having so much, it's been so hard to start bringing it out forward to the public. You know, it was a secret study, you know, from the Middle Ages persecutions. People were persecuted and burned and, you know, as witches and things during the Middle Ages. So all of that fear and superstition and confusion, it's tremendous confusion and hiddenness of it, you know, just squelched it right into the back alleys and circuit stints, you know.
could I ask a question here? I've heard of Saturn cycles before, but I don't know what they are. Can you explain I guess you should start with what Saturn represents, what discipline and... Mm. Restriction.
Yeah, Saturn is probably the only, if we have an absolute indicator to work with in our symbolic study that we're doing, Saturn is the, I guess you could say, is the only absolute we work with. Its cycle has more to do with time than the other planets do. It really speaks of time, and it speaks of divisions and limitations and things that are broken up into some definite pattern. So it's a 30-year cycle, and its transits mark the most growth things that are happening in a house, I guess. Wherever it's going in the chart, it really cleans house, so to speak. The person is undergoing learning situations to do with the house that it's transiting in.
Okay, and now we're stuck again because we haven't
talked about what the houses are.
Right.
The houses are just 12 segments arbitrarily drawn, I guess, like the zodiac is just a measuring device drawn out into space that the astronomers use to map everything in relation to everything else. They have to have these kind of lines to use. And we use a configuration of 12
pie-shaped
slices, right, where things are
wedges.
Mapped inside. Mm-hmm. And each one of these houses has a meaning. And so since the planets have a meaning and the signs have meanings and the houses have meanings, you know, that's several things right there to be shifting and working with, you know.
I guess I should give our phone number here in case I'm not asking the right questions. Our phone number is 474-5044. If I have made things as clear as mud, maybe some of our audience would like to call in and give it a try. 474-5044, if you have some expertise or some questions to ask Averill, I encourage you to go to your phone. Okay.
Now, when Saturn comes around and makes a transit one time around 29 to 30 years old, a person has done their one Saturn cycle, and that marks the end of their childhood cycle.
The Saturn cycle has to do with how long it takes Saturn to go
around
the sun.
Right, it comes back around and hits its own placement, uh-huh, where it was in the natal map, uh-huh, every 29 to 30 years. So that means a person is, at that point, fully mature, has done one Saturn cycle.
Okay.
And at 29 to 30, there's always a sort of shifting of gears that goes, well, the person has to become very kind of serious and introspective for the first time in their lives, and they kind of look back over where they've been and they want to see where they can make changes to go forward into their next cycle. So the bigger things that they're going to accomplish and the more that they're going to be able to produce later sometimes is determined by some of those decisions that they make right there at that juncture where they're going to start a new cycle. Uh-huh. And so some people don't grow beyond that cycle. They just sort of stay the same. And other people make just big strides right in there, 29 to 30. They make that big jump that meant that they could go on and do other things later. So it's interesting.
We have a caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Oh, I have perhaps, I just turned it on and I'm not familiar with your names, but the host was asking questions and is being confused and so forth. Mm-hmm. And she has a lot of the same sorts of questions that I do. And I think perhaps the point of departure for your conversation this morning came a little bit earlier when you were asking the astrologer, where did this system come from? What is the system called? Is it formally very different from other systems used around the world? And to me, that is the fundamental, that should be fundamental to your study of astrology. It maintains, or it becomes completely, to me, and for lack of a better word that I can pick out right now, becomes completely bogus when you don't know where in the history of the science these interpretations of the various planets and their signs were created. Now, nothing gets me more, I just become so exasperated with listening to this, to astrologers who make these predictions when they can't even come up with the beginning of their science. Now, I studied the I Ching, uh-huh, in a course that I had. Now, that is a form of Chinese astrology. Mm-hmm. And the professor went through all of the 56 hexagrams, and he went through all of the motions at trying to teach us exactly where this history, where this science began. Mm-hmm. And there's just absolutely, that's it to me. I'm a scientist, and there is absolutely no fundamental basis for any of this. It's all subjectivity.
Well,
and let me finish one more thing.
Yes.
And if you make a prediction or draw a chart, something to this effect, mm-hmm, what you're doing is that you are preordaining some sort of situation. For example, and I understand what's printed in newspapers and magazines is very very simplistic, and I always take those with a grain of salt. but what my problem is that if you predict some situation, and it's very fun for people to read these things. I read them jokingly all the time.
Well, I don't read them at all.
Okay, but what I'm saying is, but there are hundreds of millions of people out there who do, and my problem is that if even in your study, what I was listening to this morning, you will not predict the situation, but you will give the chart, and in a way, it's preordainment, and in your mind, you can create the situations that you talk about in your chart.
Well,
you know what I'm saying?
Yeah. First of all, I would ask our listeners not to think that my confusion, as someone who really is totally ignorant of this subject, that my confusion is necessarily the confusion of my guest or of astrologers in general. I think this is a complex thing that a lot of people know a little bit of the language, but it has, in fact, a very complex history. The one point that I think I disagree with you on, if I understand you. So last week I had on my show a woman who was a professor who was a science historian, and the study of the history of science is quite a complete field in and of itself, and is and can be very different from science. I mean, a scientist can be in a laboratory and be doing very competent chemistry and have perhaps minimal knowledge about the history of chemistry and some of the early findings in chemistry because, in fact,
right.
they may be obsolete. So one could presumably know how to read a chart very effectively and not necessarily know all the history that that
okay.
goes into it. That's...
Agreed. But don't you think... And the reason I say this is because in the example that you use, let's say a chemist has to, in order to go about his work, let's say we're talking about a polymer chemist who's developing some great new polymer for everyday use. That's a very practical sort of thing.
Mm-hmm.
And what he has to know is the very intimate chemical reactions that he's interested in.
Right.
And to me, a chemist is brought up with the fundamental belief behind chemistry is from the periodic table.
Mm-hmm.
And in a general chemistry course, you get that. You go back as far as is absolutely necessary.
Right, but the chemist doesn't have to know who wrote the periodic table,
But they understand why it's there. And my point is that in astrology, it would seem to me, and maybe I'm wrong, and I would concede this point, it would seem to me that the history of knowing exactly where these descriptions of the various planets come from is fundamental to their telling, for example, if I come in and say I want a chart drawn up for me, I don't want somebody to tell me that the moon is female and it represents shelter and mothering and baby
if,
and
if
home.
Everyone accepts that who does astrology, that's the knowing what it is from an astrological point of view. It doesn't matter. So, I mean, I'm an odd person to be defending this, but it doesn't matter so much who devised that or exactly when that came into being, but that it's very accepted and that it has been used
to me
for centuries.
It's like some musicians around. Some musicians read music, others just play by ear, but they get together and they're not going to sit around and be concerned about who invented jazz, you know, what his name was back at, because no one person did anyway. I mean, I think all this stuff came together over the ages and it's evolved, and you can find textbooks on the history of astrology.
And it is a system that...
It's just that I'm not a history...
Right.
I don't retain all that data.
And
okay.
it is a system that
has
works
been studied
for a lot of people.
Okay.
presumably.
Well, also, you know, the Halley of Halley's Comet, you know, Newton said to him, I've studied this subject, sir, you have not, you know, when Halley expressed pessimism.
Right.
Newton, if you've studied it.
Newton was a believer in astrology.
Yeah, you'd have to study it instead of reading the newspaper forecasts.
Oh,
you know,
okay.
You'd have to read at least one textbook in the subject for me to even begin to, you know, have a discussion.
Right, right. I don't want to come on and just make out like this is wrong. It just, okay, I guess perhaps, and you would agree with me on this point, is when I read the articles in the newspaper, it, to me, it's more of a cartoon than anything. It's mm-hmm. it's kind of read around the table with friends and mm-hmm. and so forth and that sort of thing. But I think the greatest problem then, perhaps, mm-hmm. that you have to overcome is the fact that you have these things that appear in very widely read newspapers and magazines.
I do. That is a problem. Yeah. I wish they wouldn't print it. And if they do print that stuff, I wish that they would say, read this for your rising sign, because if you read for your rising sign, you might get a little bit out of it.
It is curious that it has such a fascination, though, for so many people, that particular thing, even in a very watered down or very inaccurate form.
Mm-hmm.
People are, I don't know, maybe because they want to know what's going to happen today before they leave their house. I wonder why that appeals.
Yeah.
So strongly.
It is funny. One other point, and this might be changing the subject here a little bit, but when you talk about the effects of alignments of planets, okay, I'm not sure if these are effects that that the planets due to, and this is the only thing that I can think of, and correct me if I'm wrong, but it's because of the gravitational field that planets in certain alignments hold or elicit on the surface of the Earth. Now, is that why? Is that how the effects come around to
our own
person?
Emotions or our our own psychology?
I don't think anybody has determined that for sure. You know, I can work with the effects of what I'm seeing, but I don't know the cause, and I don't know whether it's coincidental. In some way, just
it's a mystery.
Or, yeah,
is that what you're saying?
Yeah, I don't really know. It doesn't really bother me that much because I'm sure someone else can. There's plenty of things to do in the field. There's lots of different kinds of astrology. You know, some people are using it medical. Some people practice medical astrology, and you know, there's weather astrology, and there's mundane astrology, and national astrology. There's all kinds of. Uh-huh. You know, you can draw up a natal chart for anything. Everything has a birth time.
I want to butt in again. I guess what I would say about that is that there is an empirical side of astrology, or perhaps astrology is really an empirical observation. And you talk about the history of astrology, that is what's happened throughout the history of astrology as people have noted what happens when certain configurations of the planets exist. What happens when one planet is in one place or another, and what happens when those things change? And that experience has piled up over the years into an empirical relating of experience that fits or that coincides with what happens in with the planets.
Okay.
And it didn't seem to matter. It didn't seem to change that much when we found out that the planets revolved around the sun as opposed to everything revolving around the Earth, because we take it from that position, how
right.
it relates to where we come from.
Right.
Does that make any sense?
Yeah, it does. It does. I think maybe perhaps an interesting question that somebody could set out to try and deal with is not only how the Earth moves about in our solar system, but in a larger sense in the galaxy, and even a greater sense the fact that we're hurtling through the universe and what effects, if any, you know, this move.
that is taken into account when we speak of going to the age of Aquarius. The whole Earth goes through cycles just like individual people do, and those cycles last for, I guess it is approximately 2,000 years. We moved from the age of Pisces to the age of Aquarius, and many people think that we're still in that transition. You know, that we're moving more and more into the age of Aquarius and more out of the age of Pisces. And as a result, the life on Earth is changing. The attitudes of people change. World history, the zeitgeist, if you will, right. Changes.
The approach to problem solving that Marilyn Ferguson talks about in the Aquarian Conspiracy is sort of the way that we look at our problems and the kinds of approaches we might take.
And many people think, for instance, that the age of Pisces was ushered in about the time of the birth of Christ, and that was a changeover from the New Testament, from the Old Testament into the New Testament, and attitudes changed dramatically, almost a revolutionary change from the Old Testament to the New Testament. Attitudes toward punishment versus the concept of God with mercy.
Right. Well, it certainly it causes enough interest for me to learn more about it, but there are just so many questions that I have, you know, that I've had, and I can't address them all. It's just
You're welcome to stop by my office in Regency Court Mall, and I'm there
talk to
most
Avril.
Every day.
I would also recommend to people who are interested in this on a more symbolic and abstract level, Dane Rudyard, who you've heard here on John Adams, talks about Dane Rudyard a lot on their new music because he's also a mathematician and a musician, a composer. But he has written some very deep and difficult books on astrology, but they're very, very deep. And the astrology of personality is one that, for instance, goes through, I guess, what Avril's talking about with this, the Saturn cycle, where he talks about people's lives changing dramatically every, say, 28, 30 years, and how those changes happen. And you might check out some Dane Rudyard.
Okay. Well,
thank you very much for joining us.
Okay, bye.
Bye. So this thing is just wandering all over the,
maybe the point is, what can it do, or what can it not do? You know,
yes, let's talk about our expectations.
Here we just set up sort of an investigation so a person can become aware of his natural trends, his energy cycles, and his emotional reactions. And I think most important, to help a person uncover some unrealized potential is one of the things that I do is in career counseling and things like that. There's a lot of people who I've worked with their charts with, and supposing they're an electrician, for example, and supposing their chart is just screaming that, you know, their natural state of being is really to work with wood and make furniture. Well, this has happened. You know, I've known someone who is actually making that switch.
But that's very specific. You know, well, I mean, I guess that's my confusion.
Well,
because
it took a lot of study and knowing that person for quite a while, too. I took some study and some thought, you know, to work with the chart and to see how the patterns were going and what kind of energy that person responded to over time. I knew this person, say, that on the example I was using, as a neighbor and friend for, you know, several years. So I don't know if it could happen that someone could just walk in my office and I could just go bang, bang. But there is a narrowing down that occurs and that one can do. You know, you can say, well, it isn't going to be this, it's not that, but it might be this, you see.
So it's a sort of framework or a way of looking at your life,
mm-hmm. and how you relate to your environment or not.
And so it isn't a way of predicting exact behavior, but of looking at your potential and what
finding out how you're reacting within your given framework. You know,
I think one of the things that's sort of curious to me, looking through this computer chart that was was done for me, is that some things, of course, sound very positive, and you just love to hear great things about yourself, and you go, oh, yes, that's me, and that's me. And then other things that either don't seem to be traits of mine, or perhaps are in fact traits, but are more unpleasant, then you might like to reject them and say, no, this can't be right. Mm-hmm. I suppose it's telling in what strikes me as I read it. Reaction itself,
right, just
is interesting.
Going through that process that you just mentioned is a learning experience, you know. Right?
What I value as character traits, what I think are positive.
Yeah, you have to decide which of that is true and which of it is not true.
Because, in fact, many of the traits, it depends on whether you value them or not. You know, some people, to be aggressive is a very positive thing.
Right.
And for other people, they consider that
this
a very negative trait.
This is a very relativistic study, completely relativistic. Everything is depending on everything else and linked with everything else.
When we started this conversation, you were talking about challenge. In other words, and that, I suppose, is a good example. Some people really embrace challenge and consider that a very positive thing. Mm-hmm. And to other people, challenge is very fearful.
Mm-mm. And some people sleep through their opportunities, as I was saying. You know, it might be their high time to be really scanning the horizon and seeing what's out there for, you know, it's a time to really bloom and to make big strides. And they may just sort of sleep through that time period.
For people that really do like this approach, does it give them courage to make some big changes? Can having a chart done be an encourager? Or
yeah, I think it does reinforce your own choices about where you're going. I think it makes you
that you may have had
feel
anyway.
Like you're on the right track, or you're doing what you're supposed to be
so
doing.
So it reinforces.
It might help you follow your instincts, your gut feelings.
Yeah.
You know, that you always tend to doubt. An interesting example for me is that I've always been very shy, and I always felt very, very badly about that until I saw my horoscope, and it was very clear that it's natural for me to be shy. Mm-hmm. So I relaxed, mm-hmm. and now I'm not controlled by that.
I think the same thing occurs with people who have a weight problem. There are really some signs, and on that ascendant or that rising sign, which determines body type, I see it all the time where some body types are just supposed to be bigger than others. And I hope the culture eventually comes around to where everybody doesn't have to look.
Allows greater diversity.
Know, really.
We have another caller. Hello, you're on the air.
Hello. I'd like to say first that I'm really enjoying the show today. I think it's great. secondly, I ask a fairly simple question that I hope you can answer, and that's, if we're in the age of Aquarius now, what's the next age, and what does it mean for the future?
Well, that's 2,000 years down the road at least, and I don't think that I'm too concerned myself about the future then, but as far as immediately...
Aren't we in the Aquarian age now or at the beginning?
Yeah, astrologers are at odds with each other about whether we are, in fact, in the age yet or not. And I'm one of the ones that say that we're still on the cusp moving into a 2,000-year age of peace and brotherhood. Hopefully.
Is this a dangerous time?
No, I think it seems to be dangerous for a while some the changes are very clashing, you know, they're very acute and abrasive sort of things that are going on. I think things will smooth out.
Thank you for calling. I really do apologize if I've made this topic more confusing
today.
The
next stage is Capricorn.
Right.
I'm sorry, but I don't know right offhand what that means for the world. I think I'd have to be on the other end of the age of Aquarius to start talking about it.
Okay, well, thank you very much.
Thank you.
Thank you for calling. This is obviously a really complex topic, and I think is a little more confusing because we do have a passing familiarity with it. Back to the 60s when everyone said, what's your sign? I mean, we had the illusion that that we knew something about it. And
that meant the whole person, which it doesn't.
And I guess it's real clear to me from talking to you today, the one thing that cleared up in my mind is that it's incredibly complex.
Yeah.
It's a very ancient art science, and that it very much, its effectiveness very much depends on the skill of the reader. Mm-hmm. And there is some wide disagreement among astrologers on a whole variety of issues and the way they're interpreting those signs, even if they all have the same chart or the same symbols.
Mm-hmm. They're even using different systems to set up their different charts. So it can get kind of confusing there, too.
Well, thank you for sharing at least this little beginning, and thank you, Carla, for helping me when I seem to be getting in way over my head.
I don't know. Is it allowed for me to say that I'm going to be on the air in the next week on another? Is it allowed? I'm going to be with Michael Dresser Monday night.
Good.
Every other Monday.
So if this just whetted your appetite and you'd like to hear more from Avril, you can tune in on Monday. Thank you very much for joining me. Our executive producer has been Carla Tanella. I've been your host, Patty Kostelic, and I hope you join me next week on Home Fires Radio Show. Thank you.
You're listening to KUAC FM in Fairbanks. It's 12 noon.
Support for this program is provided by NPR member stations and the NPR News and Information Fund. Contributors include the Corporation for Public Broadcasting, election coverage by AT&T, providing telephones, business information systems, and long-distance services, Mead Data Central for Nexus Research Services, and for international news coverage, the German Marshall Fund of the United States. This program is a production of National Public Radio, which is solely responsible for its content.
From Washington, D.C., National Public Radio presents another in the continuing series of broadcasts from the National Press Club. I'm Frank Stacio, and today's guest speaker is actress Jessica Lange.
Good afternoon. Welcome to the National Press Club. My name is John Fogarty. I'm the president of the National Press Club and the Washington correspondent of the San Francisco Chronicle. I'd like to welcome my fellow club members and their guests seated in the audience today, as well as those of you who are listening to this program over the 303 national public radio stations or watching over the 1,300 cable systems affiliated with C-SPAN, the Cable Satellite Public Affairs Network. Before going any further, I'd like to remind our members of some coming events. Tomorrow, our guest will be recently retired Smithsonian Secretary S. Dillon Ripley, and our speakers for the rest of this month are our Republican National Committee Chairman Frank Fahrenkopf on Wednesday, October 17th, former Congresswoman and diplomat Claire Booth Luce on Wednesday, October 24th, and Representative Mo Udall on Thursday, October 25th. I hope that you can make as many of those as you can make. That was brilliant. many as those you want to. I'd like to remind our audience at this point that if you have any questions for our speaker today, and I trust that you will, please write them on the cards that are furnished at your table and pass them up to me. I'll ask as many as time allows. I'd please write clearly. A lot of times a question does not get asked simply because I can't understand the handwriting, and I say that as somebody who has the world's worst handwriting. I'd now like to introduce the guests at our head table, ask our guests to please stand briefly when their names are read. Also ask the audience to withhold your applause until I have read all the names. Starting at my left, Scott Sublett, Washington Times film critic. Gene Williams, People editor, USA Today. Peter Biskind, editor, American Film Magazine. Mary Hadar, style section editor, Washington Post. Ross Mark, London Daily Express. Richard Pierce, director of Country. Tom Scutieri, Lowell's son and the National Press Club secretary. Steve Beckner, Washington Times and a member of our speakers committee who organized today's luncheon. Bill Whitliff, co-producer of Country. David Ostendorf, Midwest director of Rural America, an organization of public interest groups that works with farmers and played a role in putting together the movie Country. Pat Dowell, Washingtonian Magazine, Seth King, New York Times. I want to thank all our head table guests for being with us. I also want to congratulate the members of the audience for making it to the ballroom. It's getting easier and easier to find, and by the end of this, by about the middle of this month, it will be very easy to find. The construction will, in fact, end. It takes an awful lot to find respect in this world. When you're being held in the paw of a giant sexist ape, you slap him on the nose. When you're being ignored by Hollywood, you wow them twice in 1 year. And when you want to show the power of film in revealing a troubled America, you make a movie like Country. Jessica Lange has come a long way from the blonde starlet who whacked King Kong. She is an Academy Award winner for her role in Tootsie. She is an actress who wowed viewers with a haunting performance in Frances and her stunning performance in All That Jazz. Jessica Lange has now used film in what some think is the best art form, delivering an important message. Country, her new film, which is now opening nationwide, tells the story of today's small American farmers. These are the farmers who pay big money to harvest land that's usually been in the family for decades. For them, farming is not a business, but a way of life, a way of life that has been seriously threatened over the past 3 years because of poor economic conditions, poor yields, and government policies. Jessica Lange wanted to produce a contemporary story based on the classic John Steinbeck tale, The Grapes of Wrath. The outcome was a film that tells as effectively, if not more so, what many reporters have been writing and broadcasting for 3 years. The family farms are in trouble. Small-town life was not totally foreign to Jessica Lange. She's born in a small Minnesota town. She moved through the more rural Midwest as her father changed jobs. And she prefers to live in two rural hideaways in Minnesota and New Mexico when her schedule allows, rather than in the city. After graduating from high school in 1968, Jessica attended the University of Minnesota. She married at the end of her freshman year and spent several years traveling in the U.S., Mexico, and South America. She wound up in Paris, where she lived as an artist. She returned to Europe.